Well, we've got open lines for you now all night. Let me give you the numbers. West of the Rockies, 800-618-8255. East of the Rockies, 800-825-5033. First-time caller line is 818-501-4721. And the wild card line, of course, is 818-501-4109. I'm going to open up a special hotline tonight as well. Life-changing moments. I'll give you that number in just a second. It was a real treat having John Fogerty on, wasn't it? I just love talking to people who have had such an incredible influence on other people's lives. And he surely has with the work that he has done. Marvelous musician and a great guy, too. Today, I don't know why I did this, but I sent an email to one of our VPs of affiliate relations, Peter Trippi. And I said, Peter, I need you to find someone for me who gave me my first job in radio back in 1971. I started in 1969 in television, but 1971 was my first radio job on the air. And I said, his name was John Webster. I don't know where he is, but find him. He used to work in Detroit, obviously, but ultimately went to Cleveland. And he was working at WTAM for a long time, our monster affiliate in Cleveland right now. I said, try to find him for me. I just wanted to talk to him. Here was a guy who back almost 40 years ago had a life-changing moment for me. He changed the direction of my life by merely saying, I want to hire you. And he did that. And I wanted to thank him. After all these years, I never had an opportunity to really do that. Sure enough, Peter Trippi dug up his cell phone number. He called some folks at WTAM, and they were kind enough to give it to him. And my first call to John went straight to his voicemail, sounded the same as he did 40 years ago. And I left a message, did not leave my name. I just said, hey, call me. This was your radio reporter from 40 years ago. Is my voice the same? Well, he called me back a couple hours later. And he said, who is this? And I went, well, guess. And he couldn't guess. And I told him, and he about fell off his chair, assuming he was sitting on one. And we talked. We talked for about an hour. And I've got to tell you, it was such an influencing thing for me to talk to someone who took this audio tape from this 21-year-old kid, listened to it, and said, I'm going to hire you. And it changed my life. At that time, I was going to the University of Detroit. And I was married, and we were expecting a little baby. And I needed a job, but I wanted to stay in broadcasting. I wanted to do that. And this is 1971. He hired me for $149 a week. Which is pretty good money for a kid going to college. And I changed my times, all my school credits, I was going to school during the daytime. And he said, I need you during the daytime as a reporter. So I flipped my schedule to nighttime. So I worked full time as a radio reporter. And then afterwards, I just rush off to the University of Detroit to complete my college credits and finished my degree in 4 years. But the last two working at that radio station. And I worked my way up to a news director there. And but what an influence John Webster had on me. So I'm going to open up a life-changing moments hotline. I want you to share with us the moments of your life where something, some event changed your life, whatever it was. That number, 818-817-0021. That's 818-817-0021. And open lines continue right here on Coast to Coast AM. Let's go to King George in Pennsylvania, east of the Rockies. Our first caller of the night for open lines is you, Jennifer.
Hi, George. How are you doing this evening?
Good, and I hope you're having a good day.
Listen, the other night I was listening to a gentleman named Mike from Ohio. He called in about the King George Inn. Actually, we're 328 years old. We opened up in 1681, and we're still going. The ghost he's talking about is inspired by a song from the Bristol Stomp.
I know that song. Da, 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 da. Yeah, that's a good song.
Yeah, I know. I heard it.
I won't sing it, though.
Yeah, And I actually heard from him while I was valeting in a car, but that's besides the point. I do work there as valet presently. Evidently, what Mike was talking about, the gentleman, they all exchange hands to another owner. I cannot talk about because of the legalities. But anyway, getting back to the point. George, this life experience problem I had last year. I'm a Catholic, so is my husband. And one of the gentlemen that worked at the Bristol River Theater was a Catholic, but he conformed to being a free-spirited person.
Okay.
And right in the lobby, when he was talking about our stairs, if you know anything about colonial styles, they're not that wide. They're only probably about 2.5 feet wide. You know, during the time with the colonial period, how people were small and everything. Because when you go up and down the stairs, you have to duck your head so you can miss the wall without you getting your head decapitated.
Sure.
But anyway, getting back, we have a beautiful chandelier that does hang from that ceiling downward. George.
What?
I swear to you not. There was actually a chandelier, okay? When Mark and my husband, all three of us, we were congregating in the lobby. Okay, this is in the evening hour rush.
All right.
George in. What happens is, it actually did the sign of the cross with none of the crystals moving. There was no wind.
You mean you saw the shadow of it because of the light?
No. It wasn't a shadow, George. We have light, remember, from the chandelier. They got a little stainless glass toddler going over top the windows outside the door. We actually saw it rise up and actually do the sign of the crucifixion.
Well, I don't want to say that's strange, Jennifer. The question is why do you think it happened?
Well, the reason why I think it is because my husband and I, because we are true believers. I'm not going to say I am a religious person, okay? I do say my Hail Marys, everything, whatnot, every day. We all do sin in life. And I'm a very highly spiritual person. I do believe in crystals, New Age. You believe it. Okay, I'm open to everybody and everything. That night to me was a sign, was Aaron telling the gentleman that was talking next to us, here, A, convert back to goodness, stop being bitterness, or B, that was something else other than that. This, a month prior to that, George, I think it was back in October, okay? My husband was taking down a sign, our valet sign, to the King George. And what happens is, he was waiting for me to come in, because, it was a bitter cold night. You know how it gets up here in Pennsylvania once in a while.
Oh, my God. Well, I'm an old Detroiter. It's the same kind of weather.
Oh, yeah. No. You get a little bit worse than we do sometimes. You get some highs, you get some lows.
But it's cold.
Sometimes, yeah. But anyway, getting back, he actually felt someone walk by him. It wasn't a shadow, but you could actually hear the steps. In my name, George, at this time, the whole entire restaurant was dead. There was barely no one out except for the bar.
It's a scary haunted place, Jennifer, isn't it?
It could be, but you know what, George? We have a lot of naysayers that do come in, and you know how it is. It's like the general weighing in. We're waiting for some big ruckus to happen for everybody. Because everyone else is... Well, it's like this. Certain people do assert a certain kind of energy. I do believe in that.
Well, there's no question about that. But why do you get a crucifix coming out of a chandelier? There's a message there. There's some kind of a sign there. And that's what you need to take heed with. Michael is in Los Angeles. Hey, Michael, what's up?
Hi. You were mentioning earlier to your distinguished guest, very highly distinguished guest, about does he sense any kind of a change coming, or what we would call, old school, the quickening. But do you think there is particularly a potential second financial meltdown within a year because of the way things are going? We had 20,000 people show up for 1,000 jobs in Michigan the other day, another 30,000 for another 1,500, I think it was in Virginia or Indiana today. And I mean, and the states are just cutting, and the national government or the media is completely mute on it. And we have over 60% of the workforce that considers in the private sector considering their jobs are working jobs that they don't consider career jobs. I mean, is that kind of a... Do you sense that's part of what's going on, an acceleration of change so rapid that it's getting ahead of the our managers, if you will?
I think right now, Michael, we are in the midst of smoke and mirrors. I think we are on the tip of what could be a bigger problem. I was talking to a stockbroker yesterday. He said, George, I don't know how low it's going to go, but it's going down. There's going to be another huge correction.
It just doesn't seem like, you know, people voted and they were expecting, you know, public works programs and let's do, you know, something about the 20% unemployment and jobs where they can at least sustain themselves. And it just seems like, you know, for all the problems that we face, okay, we're on the Nobel Peace Prize, we're on Barack didn't get the Olympics. You know, to most people, that really doesn't, you know, affect their lives. People are looking for, you know, they're in an urgent, desperate situation, and Washington seems to be, and state governments as well seem to be sitting on their hands waiting for something to happen.
Absolutely. And I have said long and hard that one of the things they should have done, instead of all this TARP money that they gave out, they should have stopped collecting income tax from Americans who were working. They would have spent the money, they would have saved some of it, but they could have gotten this economy rolling along with cash. Look what's happened to the automobile industry. Now that we don't have cash for clunkers, sales have plummeted for most of the companies here in the United States. General Motors was down 40+%. Chrysler down 40-some%. Ford was down, not nearly as bad. But, you know, you just can't do that. Instead, they should have come up with some real hard, fast ways to get this economy going, first of all. The situation in Afghanistan and Iraq continues to wane. You know, troop morale in Afghanistan, as tough as our troops are and as great as our soldiers are, make no mistake about that, the morale is down. They don't know what the mission is, and I don't know what it is either. When we went in October of 2001 to get bin Laden and to punish the Taliban for not turning him over, we didn't get him. We took out the Taliban. The guy that we installed worked for a huge oil company, Unocal. So he was a friend of some friends. Michael, you're absolutely right. And I think we have just seen the tip of things that are going to happen. And we'll continue broadcasting it. You know, this is not the kind of radio that you're going to get politics and everything else, but what you're going to get from us is the truth, and that's what we'll do for you. We'll go to Gilbert in the Bay Area, first-time caller. Hey, Gilbert, welcome to the show.
Hey, George, thanks. I'm a long-time listener, first-time caller.
Great.
And I always listen to you. I have a question.
Okay.
My question is, you know, you do a lot of shows about UFOs and supernatural things. How come UFOs are never sighted over big cities, like where a large population sees them? I mean, they're always...
Well, no, they are, believe it or not. Back in 1997, Phoenix, thousands of people saw a huge triangular-shaped object. Chicago, a couple years ago, over O'Hare Airport, people saw something bizarre and huge. You're right. I mean, a lot of them are seen in rural areas, no doubt. But right. in Brazil, over major cities, in Mexico, they're all over the place. They're there.
You know, I don't believe that. I mean, I live by the airport. And I see triangular shapes all the time.
What do you see?
I mean, they're just planes. They're just jets. I mean, with one light on one each of the wings and one.
No,
in the middle.
No, we're talking about things that could be a mile long. Planes aren't that big. I mean, they're out there. Now, the question is, do you believe in UFOs?
Well, you know, I would tell you a story that happened to me that makes me believe in there are other beings around.
Okay.
And this is a true story.
All right, what happened?
I worked at a metal shop, and I was sweeping out the truck. where you load the truck out, and I was sweeping out, and I was going to make a delivery. And by the roll-up door, I was sweeping everything out, and all of a sudden, this thing just landed right there. It was a man. He was wearing a uniform, and it looked like a gunpowder gray uniform, and it was all metal. And he just, like, I just heard his footsteps, like, boom, he landed right on the floorbed. And I looked at him, and he had a baton with him, and he had a star on his uniform, like a badge, and it was on his right side of his shoulder, and it was right there, and he looked right at me, and he goes, "What are you made of?" Like that. And then, like, as soon as he said that, in a split second, he turned his head and looked towards the roof, and he was gone. And that made me believe it. And that made me believe in things, you know, that there are supernatural beings or angels or something. But when he landed, I looked at him, and he just, like, he had the baton, and his uniform was, it looked like leather, but it was metal. And he just, like, boom, landed. And it just surprised me. I remember this. I'm 48 years old. It happened in 1992. And the star on his chest, it was like, it was a circle with a star in it. And he just, like, landed there. And the baton looked like a table leg. It was skinny at the bottom, and then at the top, it was like real, it had a circle around it, right?
He was like a futuristic law enforcement officer or something.
Yeah, something like that. It was something like that, but his uniform, it was metal, like leather, but metal. It was weird. He just bended with it and everything. He just goes, "What are you made of?" And then, boom, in that split second, he said it, like I said. In that split second when he said that, he looked like towards the roof of the truck, and boom, he was gone.
See, some of these things, these mysteries, whether they're UFOs or this case with this strange creature, this being who popped in and popped out, we don't have a lot of answers for. I do know with UFOs, I've interviewed and talked with enough people publicly and privately to make a real good assumption that we're being visited. Some of these people are just too much in the know. They wouldn't be making these stories up. Let's go to Julie in El Paso, Texas. Hey, Julie, welcome to the show.
Hi, George. How are you?
Okay, I'm doing all right.
Listen, I just want to tell you my story. It's the most beautiful story that happened to me in my lifetime. And you were talking about people that change your life?
Life-changing for you, huh?
Right. Well, this person changed my life, and I think I'll always be grateful. I lost my best friend about 2 years ago. He was a disc jockey, and he was a young disc jockey.
Uh-huh.
I used to love to, well, I still do, listen to the radio. I listen to you all the time. But anyway, I used to enter contests. You know how the disc jockeys used to have,
name it and claim it and all those stuff? And they'd give out tickets and things
there
like
that. There you go. Well, I was one of those people that just loved it, okay? So they were running a contest on the local radio station here in El Paso, and I called. Well, I got through, and I was really excited. I was 13 years old. This happened to me in 1963, and I was really excited. I mean, you know, this is cool. I was happy, right?
All right, right from that point, stop. Okay. We're going to take this quick break, and we'll come back and find out exactly how this changed your life. All right, let's go back to Julie first before the net break in El Paso. Okay, so Julie, you call radio stations to win contests. Tell me about this one.
Okay, well, this one, I was, it was a contest, and it was for some tickets or something. I can't remember what it was for. Anyway, I was placed on hold, and they were playing Popsicles and Icicles by the Mermaids. And so I started singing. And before I knew it, the song was ended. He went into a commercial, and he says, "What is your name?" And I told him, "My name's Julie." And he says, "Julie, you have a beautiful voice." I said, "Well, thank you." And I said, "Did I win the tickets? You know, that's what I was calling for." And he says, "Well, you won something more than that." And I said, "What?" He says, "I want you to sing on my TV show." And I said, "What?"
He had a TV show in El Paso?
Yes, it was a television hop for teens.
Okay.
And I sang on his TV show from 1963 till 1976. And he changed my entire life because I'm totally blind, and he gave me exposure to all the surrounding area, New Mexico, Las Cruces, El Paso. And I'll tell you, well, he's gone now with the Lord, but I miss him so much. But, you know, that was an experience that I will never forget. And like you said, people make a big difference in your life. And Steve Krosno certainly made a big difference in mine.
Julie, what's your favorite song that you sing?
I think it was Angel Baby by Rosie and the Originals.
Angel Baby. How does that go?
And
try that out.
It's just like heaven being here with you. You're like an angel, too good to be true.
Boom, 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 boom.
But after all, I love you, I do. Angel baby, my angel baby. And that's as far as I'm going.
That's a great song. Great song. You did a good job with that.
Thank you.
All right.
I wanted to thank you for allowing me to share that with you, okay?
All right. That's a great life-changing moment. And we'll be back in a moment on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back. Interesting, by the way, back and forth between Los Angeles and St. Louis. And the L.A. Dodgers are playing the St. Louis Cardinals in this push. And the Dodgers are up 2-0, by the way. Let's go to St. Louis, Missouri, right around the corner. Gino, go ahead.
Hey, George. Julie sure had a good voice, didn't she?
She is dynamite, absolutely.
Well, the reason I call is just like everybody else Friday morning. I woke up, put on KTRS, and heard that Obama won the Nobel Peace Prize. And I was thinking, what for? And I thought about it for a while, and I listen to your shows every night. I record them playing during the day at work.
Uh-huh.
And twice during the last couple of weeks, the one like last Tuesday where the gentleman was on, and he said that before Christmas there's going to be some kind of event that all the leaders are going to get together and announce about aliens.
That was David Wilcock talking about how the aliens were going to be next to him on national television.
Right, and I think that the two might be related. I'm thinking that maybe, look, the Nobel Peace Prize is a serious prize, and people who win do something really serious. Maybe in secret he's made a treaty with these humanoid alien races, a peace treaty.
Well, I got to tell you, Gino, you're very perceptive because, and I don't want to, minimize this award with the president, who, by the way, himself, I think he's a little mystified that he got this. But you're absolutely right. I mean, this should be awarded to people who have either been in office for a long time, have done incredible breakthroughs between Israel and the Palestinians, or something.
Well,
and
die,
not to minimize the poor guy, but he hasn't done anything yet.
Well, here's my point. I'd like to further conjecture that possibly in a treaty involves some kind of technology, health-related, that he's trying to put that health bill through, where everybody maybe we're going to get technology in return that needs to be matriculated to everyone through a government health care program.
It's bizarre. I'm telling you, it's absolutely bizarre. Are they giving him this award for something that will happen and they know about it? I don't know, but it's truly bizarre. He's been in office less than a year, and he's already getting the Nobel Peace Prize. It doesn't make sense. Congratulations to our president, but it doesn't make sense. Phoenix, we go. Hello, Joe. You're up. Go ahead,
Hello.
Joseph. Hey, how are you?
Oh, good, George. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure thing.
I want to tell the listeners about this book. It's called The Law That Never Was. And what it is by Bill Benson and Red Beckman. Red Beckman's from Montana, but they went to every state in the Union. There was 48 states that were states in 1913, and two-thirds of the states had to ratify that amendment before it became law. And they went around, they found out by checking the records at every state that there's only one or two states that actually ratified out of, there's supposed to be 32 before it could become law. And so they wrote this book called The Law That Never Was.
You're talking about income tax, right?
Yes, sir.
Yep.
Yeah, that's the income tax, so-called income tax amendment.
So they actually checked out the voting record of every state. See, I always had been told that we were a couple states short of ratification. And you're saying that's even more than that, huh?
Oh yeah, we're about 30 states short. So they wrote this book called The Law That Never Was, and it probably is available through Amazon or somewhere. But I used to have a copy of it. And then Red Beckman was so good at educating the people in Montana that the IRS could not get a conviction in Montana, so they'd have to take all of their court cases outside of the state before they could get a conviction.
That's interesting.
Red Beckman had him so well educated up there in Montana.
Is Red still around?
Boy, I haven't heard lately. I'd have to check it out. They wrote the book way in the back in the early 80s, but I'm sure he probably is.
All right, we'll check it out. That's pretty fascinating.
Yeah, and then also there's a group that are offering a reward. It started at $10,000 for anybody that could show them the law that says that people have to file a return. And they've had that reward out. I think they've boosted it up to $100,000 now. But there is no law. And if you go to the U.S. Code, the first book, the first volume, has a table of contents. And you go down to Title 26, which is the IRS code, and it hasn't even been enacted as positive law, so it doesn't apply to anybody. Unless it's positive law, they can't enforce it.
I still think we need a use tax. We need to give Americans 100% use of their money and let them spend it the way they want. And if you want to charge a higher tax on goods, not food, go ahead and do that. Let's go to Milton, Ontario in Canada. Hello, Adam, you're up.
Hi, George. I have a question for you.
Okay.
What's the difference between astral projection and lucid dreaming?
Okay. Astral projection is when, and let's call it the ability to be aware of being in a different state of mind, whether it's consciousness, whatever. It's the ability to leave your body physically in an astral body, some call it the soul, and hover above your body or go to other places in it. You're still connected to your physical body, but in the astral body, you're able to fly to the ceiling, out into the roof, onto another planet. That's astral projection. Lucid dreaming is dreaming in your dream, you know it's a dream. So it's a dream, and you say to yourself, in the dream, I know this is a dream. And sometimes you try to change the outcome of this dream, sometimes not. But you're aware in the dream that you're dreaming. That's the difference. That help you?
Yeah. Would you also say that OBE is almost the same as remote viewing, or no?
I would say it's very close. Very close. Though remote viewing is more of using the mind, tapping into consciousness to see and travel. Astral projection is more of being in this astral body state. But remote viewing and astral projection are very similar. Do you practice them at all? Okay.
No, I got to learn how to do that.
Okay. I've only been able to do one OBE myself, but I do a lot of remote viewing. I mean, lots of it. Tom, put your shoes back on in the L.A. office, by the way. Santa Barbara, California we go, west of the Rockies. Hi, Teresa, you're up with us.
Hi, George.
What's going on?
Oh, it's just a pleasure to talk to you. You've kept me awake many nights driving home from L.A., so thank you so much.
Well, you seem like you're in a great mood today.
Well, I have kind of a somber story, but it was a life-changing experience involving actually a police officer. I was on a girls' trip only, a group of five of us, all from high school. I'm 43. So
where were we all headed?
We were going down to Mexico. Just
okay.
Down to a little place called Sayulita in Mexico.
Where in the heck is that? How far past Tijuana?
Oh, it's far. It's near Puerto Vallarta.
I would advise anybody do that now.
It's stupid. No, it was. This is about 7 years ago, wow. You know, so there was nothing real creepy going on at that point, but I would definitely not recommend it at all, ever. You know, always take your men with you. But anyways, we got down there and had a beautiful beach house with our own pool, and I mean, amazing. And I came in a day or two after my friends, so they had kind of gotten settled, and you know, had a great dinner and settled down and went to sleep. And we were woken up in the middle of the night by some honking. You know, it was kind of a remote house, and there was a guy honking or something. You know, there was a car honking.
Okay.
And it got to be annoying, and pretty soon the honking started kind of playing songs on the horn.
What were they playing?
Oh, it was just like the dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun. You know, it was just kind of really creepy and weird and a little bit frightening at that point. So
This sounds like Halloween, the 13th or something.
Oh, it's like a C-rated movie. It was so scary. I mean, you couldn't come up with this. So my two good friends were downstairs, and me and my other friend were upstairs, and there was no interior stairway. It was an exterior kind of indoor-outdoor living type place.
Yeah.
And my friends downstairs looked out their window, and it was our car. Somebody had broken into our car and was honking in our car. And so thus began the evening of just this. We weren't sure how many of them there were, but there were no phones and no thing. So here I am. I'm just like, what in the heck am we? What have I gotten myself into? So this continues, and so this one person kind of walks around to our pool area with all these weird weapons and whips, and oh God, it was horrible. And I could see him, and I'm thinking I'm gonna die. And I don't know, you know, last night when we were listening to the police officers, a couple of those stories, you could hear the anxiety in their voice.
Oh my God, they were breaking up. They were crying.
Yeah, you can hear the anxiety in mine. I mean, it's 7 or 8 years ago, and it's still, when I tell this story, all the anxiety comes back. So my only way to get out was to climb through a window, and it was about a big two-story place, and there was a big window. I was able to climb out. My other friend was so terrified. She was in a fetal position in the corner.
Well, where were you going to go?
Well, I was going to get the hell out of that house. I was going to scale. I had a 2-inch or 3-inch ledge, and I had packed a pair of tennis shoes, which is really odd for Mexico, but I did have a pair of tennis shoes, and I threw those on, and I'm terrified of spiders, just so you know that. And I climb up the window. I'm scaling the ledge. The guy is down by the pool. He sees me. I see him. And I've got these huge spiders that I'm having to break through. And I was looking at this one. I remember going, I wish you were my biggest problem, to the spider. I was actually looking him in the eye. And I jumped, basically scaled. I had to jump from our big roof to our neighbor's roof. And I made it. And it was so cool. And the tiles, it was kind of loose tiles on this neighbor's house. So I started taking the tiles off this house and screaming, you know, and of course I'm saying, you know, dear Jesus, Lord, please help me. And I don't have a phone. There's no 911. There's no police. You're alone. It's, you know, it's just miserable.
And you know, there's at least one guy out there, one whacked out guy.
At least. And, you know, at that point it was just the element of not knowing. So I'm throwing tiles at him. He's climbing up a tree now, coming after
me. So he's coming after you then, right?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. So I'm just yelling, dear Lord, dear Lord. And I actually was just hollering out to the heavens, you know, like,
yeah.
Okay, I'm going to jump off. I'm going to break one leg. I'm gonna kill this guy with my tiles first, and then you're not sure what. So I'm like, dear Lord, please, please, I promise you, if you help me, please, if you help my friends, I will be a better person in life. And
yeah, I'll make a donation, something.
So guess what? This is where the police officer walks in. I'm making a hollering mess out of this other house, our next-door neighbor's house.
The tiles are falling off and everything.
Yep. And out, we didn't know, there was no one in that house that day. Out comes this big, brave man.
Out of the house.
Out of the house that I'm tearing up now. And he hollers up at me. He thinks I'm the perpetrator, of course. And he says, and remember, we're in Mexico. He says, I am an American police officer, and I demand you to stop. And I looked down, and he's like, I'm like, help, help, help. And he was so amazing. So he and his son had just checked in that house that afternoon, and they got weapons, and they went chasing after the guy or the guys, and oh my gosh, he saved,
he did. He may have saved your life.
His name was, I believe, Mike. He was a savior to us, and we ended up, the story can go on and on and on, but it was a happy ending, and we made it through because of this amazing gentleman.
See? There's always angels somewhere, Teresa, somewhere. That was a great story. Let's go east of the Rockies, Pensacola, Florida. Hello, Ryan. Go ahead.
Hey, how are you doing, George?
Okay, Ryan. What's going on?
I just wanted to tell you a quick story. I'm an Iraqi war veteran.
Thank you for serving, by the way.
I appreciate that. Anyway, while I was over there, my squad, I was with the Marines, we were in charge of a small pump house that pumped water from the Euphrates back to base.
Ryan, I'm at the top of the hour already. It came up faster than I thought. I'm going to put you on hold, and I'll get you when we come right back, okay?
Okay. All right.
I'll put you right on hold, and we will be right back with you on Coast to Coast AM.